Good evening, I'm Allie Lightfoot. Tonight on KVNF, we'll be looking at the recent Draft Resource Management Plan, called an RMP, released by the Bureau of Land Management Uncompahgre Field Office. We're looking into this because the BLM is seeking public comment on this plan, and letters are due November 1st. This 4,000-page document is not easy to understand, so tonight we'll do our best to break it down. You'll hear from Alex Johnson, director of the Western Slope Conservation Center, Dana Wilson, the acting field manager at the BLM Uncompahgre Field Office, and Bill Day, a member of Western Colorado Congress who was on the BLM Planning Committee for the RMP. I spoke with Alex Johnson, director of the Western Slope Conservation Center, to explain a bit about the history of the RMP, the BLM, and what all these acronyms mean. The Conservation Center has been working closely with the BLM for years. In 2013, they worked with other local environmental organizations and businesses to create an alternative plan which reduced the amount of land available for oil and gas leasing in the North Fork. It's called the North Fork Alternative Plan, and we'll talk more about that later in the program. But first, a little history about the BLM. If you haven't always had the BLM land in your backyard, you may not understand how this federal land management agency works. Alex Johnson.
So the BLM stands for the Bureau of Land Management, a very general name for what at one time was very general lands. It was really the last of the major federal land management agencies to be created. And it was in the early 20th century, and it was really to deal with all of the land that no one else wanted to deal with, that the states didn't want to deal with, that individuals didn't want to homestead. And that's why you'll see a lot of it's in the desert. A lot of it's lower elevation lands, as opposed to the Forest Service, where very specific resources had been identified. Well, in the meantime, it turns out that all of these lands are, in fact, highly valuable for any number of things. As the population increases in our region, those values only continue to increase. And as the population of the country increases and consumption increases, there's more and more pressures on all public lands. You won't see, because of that unique history, you won't see any Bureau of Land Management lands out east, because all of those lands were taken by other agencies or the states. And it's also why you haven't historically seen any national parks or specific conservation lands on BLM lands. However, so as the values have increased for these lands, the conversation about how to manage them has changed significantly. And especially over the last 20 years or so, the federal government has realized that the original mandate, which was pretty much just to produce economic and financial value from the land, was limited. And in fact, that there were conservation concerns as well. We are celebrating the 15th anniversary of the creation of the National Conservation Lands System on BLM lands. The Gunnison Gorge is a national conservation area. That's on BLM lands. Dominguez Escalante, National Conservation Area, is also on BLM lands. And those are, many people who are listening today probably remember when those were created. And really, they couldn't have been created earlier because there were no federal rules or laws that allowed the BLM to protect those areas for conservation and recreation concerns. So that just gives you a sense of the journey that the BLM has taken, and the very difficult job they have. There's a long history of resource extraction on these lands, and that continues to be the case. In our area, oil and gas is of primary concern as far as resource extraction. But meanwhile, there's also very much increased interest in recreation and the conservation concerns. And I think this resource management plan, which will determine all of the management actions for the next 20 to 30 years, that it really represents that complicated history and all the various interests that are all focused on these lands.
I asked Alex who the BLM worked for. Whose side were they on?
Ideally, as public servants, they are on no one's side. We really don't want them to be biased in any way besides the federal laws and mandates that govern the decisions they're making. And so they ideally will manage for all of the resources in a way that's sustainable. And that's a part of their mandate, is to manage resources, including the ecological and the environmental health, indefinitely into the future. Now, the real challenge and real conflict comes in when community members or organizations like the Conservation Center disagrees with the decisions that are made, and you know whether we believe that the decisions they're making will actually sustainably manage those resources into the future, and where the priority is going. Historically, has there been a priority put on oil and gas development? And in fact, is that still the current state of managing lands on BLM lands? I would say yes. And, you know, that's something that is a part of the history, of the organization. It's a part of the historic culture of it, just how decisions have been made in the past. And it's a collective effort that we all need to make as communities, as public citizens, in the decisions we're making on our elected officials. All of that shapes the decisions that are happening on the ground. So will they be sued by various groups? That's something they have to consider.
What if the BLM just says no fracking anywhere around here? The North Fork is one big recreation area or wilderness area, or it falls into some designation that protects it from that kind of from fracking. Could they say that?
There would be significant consequences for the BLM if they were to say that the entire North Fork Valley were off limits to oil and gas leasing. Are there legitimate concerns to oil and gas activities that could that would justify that decision? That's also a very good question, and one that I would likely answer as yes. However, the reality is that, and I think that your question is getting to this reality, is that the BLM has a number of mandates and a number of interested parties that they are having to respond to and acknowledge and include in their final decision making. There are industry representatives, and there are municipalities concerned about economics that are weighing in on this decision. And so likely the end product will be some sort of combination of those various concerns. And so as a conservation group, what we will be doing through the remainder of this plan is encouraging the community to support all of the work that we've done to date to protect our very real assets and our very real natural resources here that we do legitimately think will be negatively impacted by oil and gas activities. And so, you know, we've spent years working on delaying the lease sales and then producing the North Fork alternative, and we have that in the plan. And so we very much will continue to support the North Fork alternative and encouraging others to do so. I know that there, for a wide number of very legitimate reasons, there are a lot of people sending comments to the BLM to ask them to not include any oil and gas leasing in the North Fork Valley. My request is that as people are submitting those comments, that they make sure that those comments are not interpreted as a lack of support for the North Fork alternative. really, it's by far the most productive comments, especially if you're writing about no leasing in the North Fork Valley, to make sure that you include continued support for the North Fork alternative. And, you know, while that might seem like a no-brainer to folks who don't want any oil and gas activity, the BLM really has to take the comments and letters at their word and what's in those letters. And again, this gets back to the very specific, how specific they need to be. And so, you know, I am very confident the BLM knows that there's a large number of people in the North Fork that do not want oil and gas activity happening within our area. But, you know, again, how do we empower the BLM with information, very specific, concrete information, to create a final plan that's as protective as they can politically and scientifically justify?
The BLM Uncompahgre Field Office, which is located in Montrose, manages more than 900,000 acres of public land in BLM Colorado's Southwest District, including the Gunnison Gorge National Conservation Area and Wilderness, as well as portions of Dominguez Escalante National Conservation Area, Dominguez Canyon Wilderness, and four river systems, the Gunnison, San Miguel, Dolores, and Uncompahgre. Here, Dana Wilson, the acting field manager at the Uncompahgre Field Office, explains what the mission of the agency is.
Our mission is a multiple-use sustained yield mission, which means that we have the responsibility of managing lands so that they are available and sustainable for the future, and also have an obligation to manage the public's resources. So in some cases, we've identified that best use is development through a variety of projects, mineral extraction, grazing, transmission projects that bring electricity to people's homes. And then in some cases, we've identified that there's a greater benefit in protecting some of these areas through conservation. And so that's, you know, it's a complicated mission that we have as an agency to make all of those determinations. But something that makes us really unique from other agencies is our location to many of the communities that we serve. Most BLM land is located in a lot of cases right in people's backyards. It's close to towns. It's close to where people live. And so in a lot of cases, people really rely on BLM lands and how we decide to manage them because it's part of their daily life. And that's really unique, especially in the West. I've grown up in the Midwest and the East, and you just don't have that interface with public lands that the way you do in Colorado and throughout the West.
I feel like you guys are put in a position where it's sort of contradictory, because your job is basically to protect the land, but then on the other hand, you have to open up the land to things that are never going to be, you would never say this is good for the land to drill.
Well, so, you know, the BLM, we're a multiple use agency. So, you know, we are very different than National Park Service, where lands identified as national parks are, you know, permanently protected from various uses, right? And their focus is conservation, recreation, and whatnot. So the Bureau, you know, historically and still today, we are charged with trying to find the right balance of resource use and resource protection. And that is a really difficult job, as you pointed out. And when we do authorize things that use the land, we have the responsibility to make sure that they're done in the most environmentally responsible way possible. And that includes, as we've identified in the resource management plan, for areas that are available for oil and gas leasing, there would be lots of conditions of approval in terms of protections need to be in place. Some areas we've identified there would be no surface occupancy, so there would not be a drill site or a well on that land. There may be directional drilling that would occur from private property or other parcels that have already been disturbed. So there's also a lot of timing restrictions and limitations we put on some of our leases for wildlife habitat concerns. And so, again, it kind of goes back to multiple use, where some areas we have said, yes, this area deserves special protection, like the national conservation areas, national monuments, wilderness, things of that nature. And other areas are open as multiple use areas, and so they would be available for, or potentially available, I should say, for use and development.
I asked Dana how and why the latest draft of the resource management plan was written.
Our resource management plan for the Uncompahgre Field Office was last updated back in the late 1980s, so it was definitely time for us to do an update. And so quite a bit of research and data collection and work goes into putting together one of these plans. The plan is put together by an interdisciplinary team of specialists on our staff here in Montrose, Colorado. We have everyone who weighs in, from recreation planners to mineral engineers to hydrologists, wildlife biologists, really almost everyone on our staff gets involved in the process at some stage or another. And the reason that we do that is just so that we get a really well-rounded perspective and look at what the issues are on the ground, and then what the impacts would be of managing certain areas in different ways. And another part of the development process of the plan that's really critical is getting insight and input from other agencies and the public in general. And so, as you mentioned in your opening remarks, that's kind of where we are in the process now, where we've to date we have taken quite a bit of public input into the development of the plan, but now is another opportunity to hear from the public on specific comments related to some of the proposed actions that we're looking at taking.
I spoke with Hotchkiss resident Bill Day about federal land use designations, such as conservation areas, wilderness areas, and recreation areas. Such land designations can, in some cases, provide protection from other uses, such as resource extraction. Bill is a member of the Western Colorado Congress. This organization is currently working on a number of issues, including local food and agriculture, public lands management, and the impacts of developing oil and gas resources. Bill spent 13 years doing bird monitoring on BLM land and was on the BLM planning committee for the latest draft of the resource management plan, providing input on potential areas that could be eligible for wildlife protections. Here, Bill describes the changes in the current resource management plan from the one drafted in the 80s.
I feel like the BLM is trying to do the right thing, probably a little better. You know, things just look a lot different now than they did 30 years ago when they were doing this before. I mean, oil and gas, for instance, has changed. There are places that they never thought it would happen before, and it happens differently. The population has changed. The way people recreate out on the BLM land has changed. There are changes in wildlife that we hadn't even thought of. When they did the last one, people didn't even realize that the Gunnison sage-grouse is a separate species from the other sage-grouse, which at the time we thought there was only one. Deer populations have been declining already, you know, largely because of more people and more people traveling and more roads out there. And, you know, not just to look backwards, but to look forward, you have to try to figure out what changes we're looking at in the future. You know, no doubt there will be some that we don't know about, but a really big one is climate. You know, we have to think about, you know, you may think a degree or two is a small amount of change, but when it starts making a big impact on vegetation, that's something we have to consider.
So there are eight types of land use designations from the Bureau of Land Management. And I'm wondering if you could talk about the ones that might apply to parcels of land in Western Colorado, not just in the North Fork Valley, but other areas where leasing for fluid minerals is on the table. What might possibly be designated as a wilderness area or a recreation area, and what could be the process for getting it designated that way?
Well, this is the process for several of these designations. One of them that I really like are the ACECs, or Area of Critical Environmental Concern, and those areas get quite a bit of protection. It's not like a one-size-fits-all kind of management prescription. You have to look at the individual areas to see what, how they may be protected. But there are 15 of those that are at least on the table, but the BLM is always only putting 8 of those 15 in their preferred alternative. So I would love to see more of the ACECs moved from alternative B, you know, the conservation one, to the preferred, which is what we're going to end up with. So the ACECs are a classic, really, really well-protected designation. Lands with wilderness characteristics is another one. It's not the same as a wilderness area, but there are just a few places that are big enough and wild enough or unspoiled or unroaded enough to, you know, to really qualify as an LWC. And not all of them are even being put in the preferred alternative either. Once again, those get really, really strong protection. I don't think they can be leased. The ACEC certainly cannot have surface occupancy. There's one other one I have to mention. It's the ecological emphasis areas. There are 12 of them, and the BLM may not really consider them a quote-unquote special designation, but in effect they are. These are really big areas, 177,000 acres in the preferred alternative. And these are the ones that they may not get as much protection as we would like, but they're big, and they're, you know, there's some strategy and planning involved in trying to put these areas in places that especially the deer and elk can use to, you know, to really to walk up and downhill like they have to do every year. So they need some big continuous areas to do that. So, you know, I would love to see everybody ask the BLM to keep not only all 12 areas, but all 240,000+ acres carried over into the preferred alternative. This is really a nice, you know, important designation. It's, you know, it's nowhere close to being a land of wilderness characteristics, and it's not even close to being an ACEC. Another comment, though, I would have to make with them, with the EEs, is that they don't necessarily have no surface occupancy, but they can have, and that's what we should ask for. You know, in alternative B, the EEs mainly have no surface occupancy, you know, for oil and gas. In the preferred alternative, they don't. So that's a really important difference that we can ask for in our comments. They make it sound like there are really four choices here. In reality, what you're going to get is the preferred alternative, you know, alternative D. But it can be changed. You know, you can take bits and pieces from any of the others and have them inserted into the one we're going to end up with.
So this is also helpful in letting people know how to even read the resource management plan. There are a lot of acronyms involved. When you first go to the, you know, to the document and try to look at it, it's a little overwhelming. You're saying that what we're going to end up with, if you go to the website right now and look at the resource management plan, that's called the RMP, there's going to be one a part of it that's in there that's called Alternative D.
Yeah.
And that is, and you're saying that that is what we're going to possibly end up with.
It's very likely that we will end up with some form of that, but it can be changed.
Mm-hmm.
And
based on the comments.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the importance of trying to, I know it's a lot of work, but trying to write a good comment that tells them specifically what to change, you know, what's wrong with it, and what you would like them to do instead, and in what place, you know, rather than just a generic blanket quote to cover the whole UFO office.
Let's take Jumbo Mountain as an example. So this is a mountain and a trail system that are pretty much literally in Paonia's backyard. There are some people who would like Jumbo to be designated as a recreation area, which they feel would protect it from oil and gas development. How would you go about trying to get it designated that way? And like, what would some of the obstacles be?
I think it will be designated that way, Allie. It's the perfect place to give that designation to, a special recreation management area. You know, because it's right there on the edge of town, you know, it's not a wilderness, you know, it's none of these other things. It's a perfect recreation area that's important to the local population. In my opinion, it would not be appropriate to have oil and gas development there. Probably the best thing is to look at that in a little greater detail, because even though it's very likely to be an SRMA, there are still maybe some gray areas on how that would be managed.
Aside from oil and gas development on our BLM lands, there are many other parts of the resource management plan that need public input. Alex Johnson of the Western Slope Conservation Center explains how he feels the Jumbo area could be managed.
So in the case of Jumbo Mountain, it's the BLM is deciding whether to designate the entire area or part of the Jumbo Mountain area as a special recreation management area. Now, they could also choose a different recreation designation that would be a lesser mandate. But, you know, for us, the Conservation Center, we are suggesting, highly encouraging the community to support the special recreation management area, which is the highest degree of recreation protection for that region. And what that means is that if the BLM were to include that in their final plan, then they would be mandated to, for the next 20 years, manage that area for the quality of the recreation experience. So, you know, what type of recreation would also be included within that designation? But as for specific routes, that's what they'll be deciding over the next 20 years. You know, where will there be mountain biking routes? Where will there be motorbiking routes? Where will there be OHV? Where will there be horse riding? How will those overlap? And, you know, we want to empower the BLM to create a plan that has the most accurate and up-to-date information regarding all of those resources, especially within the North Fork Valley here.
If you're just joining us, we're looking into the recent draft of the Resource Management Plan, called an RMP. The goal here is to provide comments that are relevant and informed on this plan so that they're useful to the BLM. We're looking into a bunch of different things pertaining to this issue. One way to protect the land from oil and gas development in some cases is for the land to have a special federal designation. Western Colorado Congress member Bill Day spent time on a planning committee for the BLM Resource Management Plan. He wishes more of the lands were protected for wildlife in this draft of the Resource Management Plan. Here he explains.
Well, I wanted to see more just natural-like wildlife habitat. I wanted to see that habitat being somewhat connected, which is, even though I spent a lot of time working on birds, it's a bigger deal for non-flying animals. I mean, the biggest winners or losers here can be mule deer and elk, because they have to, you know, walk as they migrate up and downhill. So I wanted to see, you know, some pretty decent quality wildlife habitat remaining. Much of it, of course, has already been gone because they didn't do this in the past very well. So, yeah, I feel like if we have some big pieces of connected habitat that are a lot like what these animals evolved with, you know, that's what I would like to see. And really, to do that, I'd like to see a minimal amount of, you know, of oil and gas development, especially the roads. You know, the travel management figures in this really big, even though route-to-route travel management is not part of this plan. but the decisions we make will impact that when they get around to doing that part.
Bill feels more of the land in this plan should be designated as an ecological emphasis land, which gives it some protection from oil and gas development.
When you're talking about these EEs, which stands for ecological emphasis, can you give me an example of the land that we're talking about that people would be familiar with?
Well, yeah, there's parts of Jumbo Mountain, parts of McDonald Creeks, southeast of Paonia, some of the stuff that's off to the east of the back road to Crawford. And they're really meant to be really just connectivity corridors. When you see mule deer down in the Dobies in January, these are the areas where they need to walk back and forth, you know, between the West Elks and the bottom. So it's really a pretty big deal for deer and elk. There's another area, you know, we're probably familiar with driving to Grand Junction. If you ever see antelope off on the east side of the road, that's an area that should be an EE and actually is probably going to be taken out of it if we don't complain. But it's also a big, if you've ever been lucky enough to see a burrowing owl out there, it was probably in the possible EE. Another one is Sims Mesa, south of Montrose, which is until very recently had Gunnison sage grouse. I'm not sure if there are any grouse left. You know, there could have been if they had done this 30 years ago. But it's still an important area for mule deer down this, you know, the same area, the same sagebrush. There are some areas out on the west slope, and, you know, I hope that our North Fork listeners, you know, will keep the Paradox Valley and the Dolores River Valley in mind and make comments to try to protect that end of the field office also. But they're spread out. Rubidoux Canyon's one, Dry Creek west of Montrose is another one.
I asked Dana Wilson of the BLM if effects on the economy were also taken into consideration and how you might address that in a letter to them that would be effective.
Yes, actually part of our development of the plan is we compile a socioeconomic report that is done, and it is available online and also as part of the document as an appendix. And it was done back in 2010, and it takes a look, it uses quite a bit of data through Census Bureau and economic reports that are available, and it takes a look at all of the communities that are encompassed by the plan within five counties that the Uncompahgre Field Office Resource Management Plan would cover, and takes a look at population growth, industry trends, and all different types of economic data. And we use that as part of our analysis in developing in terms of when we look at what impacts may be and what the relationship is of BLM-managed lands to the various communities within the field office.
Some people in the community express concern over any kind of oil and gas development or even actually the lease even being open on a parcel, because they feel that that affects the economy negatively. They feel like that would bring down our real estate value, and it would, you know, farmers wouldn't, they might have trouble selling produce that was near oil and gas. Is that the kind of thing you would look for in a letter if you want to talk about effects on the economy, or do you need more hard data included?
Sure. Well, we certainly acknowledge agriculture as being a really important part of many of the communities that fall within the field office boundaries. And so, you know, as I mentioned, grazing is one, and there traditionally has been a lot of agriculture in the area along with oil and gas and, you know, coal mining and things like that. The resource management plan itself does not approve leases. It doesn't lease any parcels in particular and doesn't approve any project level work. So the analysis that's done at this point on the oil and gas side is where the oil and gas resources exist. And in some cases, you know, we do look at water, or we always look at water quality and air resources, and in some cases have applied specific stipulations in our plan so that if there was interest in developing or leasing those parcels from industry, we've already identified that there would be some conflicts that would exist in those areas and have applied mitigation measures to help counteract those. So again, this plan is really looking at a higher level, and it's taking into account economics of and the how the agricultural economy contributes to local communities and how that relates to BLM public lands in those areas.
I asked Bill Day if he thought there was any area in the plan where oil and gas development would be acceptable.
To me, it makes more sense to do oil and gas leasing in places where it has already happened and where there is an awful lot of oil and gas, to where, you know, it's meaningful in the supply and, you know, and having a positive economic effect. To lease a whole lot of land over here, you know, in the North Fork, where there's probably not very much of it, not enough to, I mean, it's like a drop in the bucket. It'll have no effect really on the big picture of how much oil and gas we have, or gas, you know, no oil at all. This seems like the classic place where it's not appropriate. I mean, you're damaging, you know, the existing economy for people who live here now, you know, in the agriculture, tourism business, or whatever, with, you know, very little to gain. And, you know, most of what few jobs, if any, ever happen, you know, may go to people who don't even live here, may not even live in the state now. So I think this is an inappropriate area in general, somewhere like, you know, Payon's Basin, which is actually was a nice place before they did it, but it would make sense to do more of it over there and less of it in a new place.
An oil and gas company generally won't lease the land to drill unless they find the resource there. I asked Alex Johnson of the Conservation Center where oil and gas has been found and where they're already drilling for it.
Very generally, I'll say that most oil and gas activities in recent years have been occurring north of the North Fork of the Gunnison River and of the Paonia Reservoir. So that includes up the Muddy Creek drainage, that includes Pilot's Knob and above north of Somerset, as well as up Stevens Gulch. You know, that area, there's been less activity, but there's certainly quite a bit of interest. And not surprisingly, that overlaps pretty closely with the areas that have been identified to have the most oil and gas resources. There's really just the general geological consensus is that there's not a significant amount of oil and gas resources south of the North Fork, primarily just because of the geology, with the West Elk Mountains pushing up through the shale and sandstone, as well as the Gunnison uplift, where the Black Canyon is. So most of the activity has been to the north of us, and that's likely where the most activity is going to be continue as far as interest in leasing. That doesn't necessarily mean that all of the lands, all those other BLM lands, are safe. And particularly, you know, what we saw 5 years ago when the price of oil and gas was up, that there was a lot of speculative nominations of leases that just really benefit the portfolio of these large oil and gas companies. And so that's something that really does have a direct negative impact in what we saw several years ago. There is more activity northwest of Delta as well, between Delta and Grand Junction. That's perennially seen quite a bit of oil and gas activity and continues to see that. The farther south you go, you're really leaving the Piceance Basin, which is a geographic region that is known to have quite a lot of oil and gas activity.
I asked Dana Wilson at the BLM if a no oil and gas leasing plan for the North Fork might be possible.
Particularly with the oil and gas issue, we worked with residents and groups within the North Fork Valley communities which would be most affected by some of the decisions that would be made for oil and gas leasing. And they, in fact, actually submitted us a partial alternative specific to oil and gas that we did incorporate directly into the plan. So none of the alternatives that we looked at, including the one that was submitted by residents in the North Fork Valley, included a no leasing option. So at this point, we're making our decision based sort of on that range of alternatives that we're working within.
And when you talk about this alternative, you're talking about the North Fork alternative plan.
Yes.
And how is that put into the resource management plan? Like, how is that implemented, I guess I should ask.
Sure. So what we did is, as I mentioned, we looked at several alternatives, alternative A being no action, which means that we would continue management as we currently are managing. Alternative B, which, as I was talking about, sort of that combination of resource use versus conservation, the alternative B was geared more towards a heavier percentage of lands being on the conservation end of things. Alternative C was heavier on the end of the spectrum of resource use. And then alternative D is what we call our preferred alternative right now, which is sort of in the middle of B and C. And so when we worked with the groups in the North Fork Valley who expressed interest in submitting an alternative, we included it as a partial alternative because it only applied to a portion of our field office planning area, and it only related to oil and gas resources. And so it did not look at other resource uses like recreation and grazing that we needed to make decisions on, and it only made it for that particular region. So we included it as a sub-alternative, and we refer to it as B1 in our planning document.
So after November 1st, when all the public input is received and analyzed and a final resource management plan is drafted, how will this plan be used? Dana Wilson explains.
You know, the resource management plan is, as I mentioned in the beginning, is sort of a fundamental component of the Bureau and how we conduct our work and how we manage lands. And so there's, you know, as you can imagine, hundreds of resource management plans across the Bureau. We have other plans that go beyond just the field office boundaries and take a look at resources at a landscape level, like, for example, the Gunnison Sage-Grouse Plan or the Greater Sage-Grouse Plan takes into account, you know, multiple states, multiple field offices and whatnot. So the plan is really what it is. It's a tool for us as land managers to be able to conduct our day-to-day work. And so we, whenever we get a project proposal in the door, once we have an approved resource management plan in place, you know, we sort of start step one with, well, what does the resource management plan say? So if someone's proposing a new mountain bike trail, we take a look at what we've identified that area for. And some areas are, we're multiple use agencies. So a lot of areas we manage are available for multiple use. And then we have some areas, as I mentioned, that we've identified specifically that this is going to be a designated recreation site where we might have some facilities that we put in there. And so, you know, another good example would be a transmission project that comes in the door. Well, what types of landscapes does the transmission line cross? What other types of activities are happening out there? And so we use that RMP sort of as a guiding tool for us to do future analysis at a project level when we get those proposals in through the door.
So now we know a little bit more about the BLM and the RMP and the EEs and the ACECs. We also probably actually have to read some portions of the draft resource management plan and do some real research on our own. Here, Alex Johnson reminds us how you can write the most effective and useful letter.
The BLM has made it very clear that this is not a vote. So we are not casting our ballots for a particular alternative. In a way, that makes the comments more difficult because we need to say which alternatives and which actions from those alternatives that we support, and then the more importantly, why we support it, and specifically why the BLM needs to choose those particular actions from that alternative, and providing as much evidence and specific information as you can as a citizen. Now, that can be very overwhelming. And I know that there's a lot of folks out there who are listening right now who might be waiting, potentially procrastinating, and really that is probably the primary reason why, is because it's more than just saying, I support the North Fork alternative or B1, or I don't think there should be any leasing or any oil and gas activity in the whole North Fork Valley. While those letters let the BLM know we're concerned, it does not empower the BLM to make the decisions that will ultimately affect the final plan. And so we need to empower the BLM with information, with data, with our own lived experience, with our own expertise, so that they can make the what we believe to be a very reasonable decision, which is at the very least to include alternative B1 in their final plan. There's other conservation concerns that we also have been working to educate the community about and to include in comments. I would also say that the benefit of this not being a vote is that the BLM has also made it clear that they can pick and choose from any alternative. So it's not like we have to choose between the really good plan or the really terrible plan. The BLM has the authority to choose any specific action regarding any specific resource, whether that's recreation, whether that's water and riparian zones, rare fish habitat, and oil and gas as well. You know, all of those are different resources that they can make very specific decisions on, regardless of which alternative it is in.
And so do you want people to just call you up all day and ask you specific questions about their letter? Or is there a better way for them to, utilize the help that the Conservation Center offers in this case?
Absolutely. So the website is a great resource, westernslopeconservation.org. The Citizens for Healthy Community also has their website, which has a lot of great fact sheets as well. There's citizens who have been organizing letter writing workshops, actually, after the official ones finished up over the last few weeks. So for the next Monday and Tuesday from 7 to 10, every Monday and Tuesday at the Paonia Library, I know that there will be some community members there to help with resources and support people all the way through the end of the comment writing period. We'll be sending in our comments and making sure that our communities are aware of that as well. So that's coming up, and you can always stop by the Conservation Center office. You can call or email, but you know, the best is to get those resources, come to the meetings that are already scheduled. If you'd like to host your own house party for writing comments, we have some resources for that. But please tell your friends, spread the information, and make sure that you support the North Fork alternative. We've been working so hard on this. We just need to make sure it gets in the final plan.